Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on antique firearms when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependents, incompetence, incapacity. We've now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions in our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs. Doctors manage and treat our health problems. Lawyers direct our business and legal affairs instead of you and I relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by our paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free General Law CD package? It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website and send me an email. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send me your email request. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about antique firearms and the nine categories or classifications of persons who are prohibited from keeping and bearing arms, keeping a firearm. Are there any loopholes in the law? Well, you bet there is. And one of the things that we discover in law is all of the but-seps, a lot of but-seps. For instance, you've heard me talk in times past, we have laws of general applicability that require you to vaccinate your children in order to send them to public school. Well, you got two outs there. Number one, you don't have to vaccinate your children if you don't send them to public school, and you have three options on educating children. You can send them to public school, private school, or home school. Every state has that provision. So the idea that you have to vaccinate your child and you have no exceptions is not true, because there are three exceptions. In addition to the three locations to educate your child, every state in the union will recognize one or more of these exceptions, and that is you may have a personal objection to vaccinations. A few states will exempt you if you have a personal objection, personal moral code. And then all but two states will recognize these two: either a medical problem, that's a medical excuse, or a religious objection. So it could be religious under the First Amendment, it could be medical, or it could be a personal moral code. Two states won't recognize any of the above: West Virginia and Mississippi. In those two states, you still have a remedy. You go into state district court and you sue for declaratory judgment. And then you have to have a court order for either a medical objection or a religious free exercise objection. All right. Well, now that we understand that just because there's a law in the books doesn't mean that there isn't a but-sept or an exception to the rule. But it isn't advertised. Nobody's going to tell you that it's there. And the same thing is true here for firearms. You know, nobody's going to say, well, here's the exception to the rule. Now, this doesn't mean that laws don't have any force and effect, or that there aren't laws out there that regulate guns or vaccinations or anything else. It means that there are exceptions to the general rule that applies to everybody. I mean, if you're a guy that's got AIDS, and there's a law that requires you to get a vaccination, and this vaccination would probably impair your immune system to such a degree that it would kill you, do you think maybe you could get a waiver, an exception to the rule? And the answer is, well, of course you could. Well, if a guy with AIDS could get an exception to the rule, could somebody, let's say, that had tuberculosis get an exception? Well, yeah, probably. Well, if you had a doctor, a medical doctor, who determined that for whatever reason, that a vaccination would impair your health, safety, and welfare, and would give you that excuse, could you be accepted? Well, the answer to that is yes, in every state but Mississippi and West Virginia, which you'd have to go into federal, or not federal, but state court, and get a declaratory judgment stating that, signed by a judge, based upon the testimony of your doctor or your clergyman or some combination thereof. So there are exceptions to the rules, and these rules are made with specificity to exclude certain people that are constitutionally protected, whether you're Amish or Catholic or whether you've got AIDS or whether you have some other religious objection. Well, same thing is true here with firearms. Now, the other day, I saw some numbers that were really shocking or surprising or staggering or unusual, and that is that in America we have 25,000 gun regulations. I didn't know that. I thought, you know, there's probably 100 or 150. You know, I've heard about all these gun regulations, and Congress was passing this and that and another thing, and the Bush administration, at least to their credit in my view, let some of these gun laws lapse. Let them just disappear. They were on the books for a certain number of years, and when they expired, they didn't renew them. And I think that that's a benefit to all of us, whether you're a gun owner or not. If for no other reason you're a taxpayer, and if for no other reason, then who in the hell wants to support the law enforcement growth industry regulating people's right to keep and bear arms? I mean, if they've got the right, leave them alone. Well, anyway, moral to the story is that you got 25,000 of these gun laws, and these laws come under two primary cases. Hale versus Hinkle, cited at 201 U.S. 43, and the other is called Wickard versus Filburn, cited at 317 U.S. 111. And those laws have been around. For instance, Wickard versus Filburn is an extrapolation of basic American jurisprudence or law in America since the 1940s, and to Hale versus Hinkle since 1905. And my observation as a law school teacher is that these 25,000 rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices that have been put on the books don't really violate any constitutional protection. All of our constitutional protections that we had from 1787 to 1900 are still in full force and effect. Now, some privileges that we could have accrued from 1900 to 2005 have been regulated and controlled under the Commerce Clause. Commerce Clause. But we haven't lost any constitutional rights that we had in our original Constitution in 1787 up through 2005, or if there are any, I couldn't find it. And I've been looking pretty diligently here. So even if you're a convicted felon, you still have all of your constitutional rights that you had from 1787 to 1900. Now, Congress, had they stayed out of the legislative business under the Commerce Clause as it relates to keeping and bearing arms under the Second Amendment to the Constitution, you'd have a whole lot more latitude than you have today. You'd have a lot more freedom than you have today, but you certainly haven't lost anything that you had. You might have lost something that you potentially could have had, but Congress decided that they weren't going to let you have that. And if you've got a complaint, it's with your founding fathers and the Commerce Clause, not with the Second Amendment or with the Congress or the 25,000 rules and regulations that regulate firearms today. So let's take a look at why. Why is that? If that's what I'm telling you, and if that's true, why is that true? Well, we take a look at antique firearm exceptions. Federal law exempts antique firearms from all gun controls. Okay, that's simple enough. Antique firearms are exempted from gun controls. So the 25,000 laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices don't apply to antique firearms. So now, what is an antique firearm? Well, 18 U.S.C. Code Section 921A16 defines antique firearms as all guns made prior to 1899, such as, but not including, nor not exempting, muzzle loaders which are made any time, and replicas of pre-1899 cartridge firing guns made any time, providing such replica uses cartridges, quote, not readily available in the ordinary channels of commercial trade. That's an important one. Not readily available in the ordinary channels of commercial trade. We're going to get into commerce here in just a minute. However, under 26 U.S.C. 5861 of the IRS code, all cartridge-firing machine guns and short-barreled shotguns are illegal regardless of when they were made. So if you had a short-barrel shotgun, I think that's one under 24 inches. Now, don't quote me on that, but seems to me that 24 inches overall length on a shotgun, it's something like that, 22, 24, 26 inches, somewhere along in there. Normally, shotguns are pretty long guns. They're called long guns or long barrel guns. And, you know, they're probably 4 feet, 48 inches. Maybe could even be up to 5 feet or 60 inches. I got an old muzzle loader here that's 5 feet long. I mean, that sucker has one long gun. Well, if you're going to cut that gun down, that's okay. You can cut one of those down. See, you can have a snub-nosed 38 Smith & Wesson. They call them snub-nosed. I mean, they only got a barrel about 3 or 4 inches long on them. I mean, it's almost like firing it right out of the cylinder. But they'd have a little barrel in there to give us some kind of guidance, I guess. So the barrel on a pistol, a rifle, I don't care, but if it's a shotgun, now, it don't make any difference if it's an antique or it's not an antique, or if it's a machine gun. Notice machine guns are regulated under the IRS code. They're not regulated under the Second Amendment or gun control legislation. And anybody in America can have a machine gun. I don't understand what all the complaints are about. I mean, you got these people, you know, they're complaining that people have got fully automatic machine guns and they shouldn't have them, and it's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. The only requirement that I know of, not from what I've seen, is that you have to pay a $225 tax stamp to have one. I can't imagine why anybody would want one, but, you know, I guess it's like a phallic symbol. I was talking to a guy the other day, young kid. He's a kid to me, you know. He's a married man. He's got children, but this young fellow, and he wanted an AK-47, and he was asking me all these questions about guns, and I'm not the guy to ask. I don't know very much about guns, and I'm not a total illiterate, but, you know, I'm not a gun nut, and so I don't have, you know, a whole lot of expertise in guns and one thing or another, but wanted an AK-47. I said, what for? And he said, well, to defend myself. Oh, okay. Well, is there something that an AK-47 has that a .22 Remington bolt action doesn't? And he assured me that oh yeah, an AK-47 is an assault rifle. Why, it's 10 times the gun that Remington made. You know, I was a kid, you know, and my dad gave me a .22 bolt action Remington. I think it was manufactured about 1922, as I recall. Kind of an old gun, you know. But I went out and I shot a lot of birds and a lot of deer and a lot of coons and varmints, and shot a lot of digger squirrels and prairie dogs. And I noticed that a .22 is called the assassin's choice of weapons. I mean, assassins, when they want to kill somebody, use a .22. And I haven't seen anything that a .22 wouldn't kill. I mean, it kills cows, bulls. You know, I got people out here, they go out deer hunting and they're going to shoot an animal, a deer, about the size of a goat or a sheep. Well, I wouldn't use a .30 caliber to shoot a sheep or a goat. City people do. I use a .22. I've never been disappointed yet. I remember in the old days, you know, when we were killing a cow, you know, to butcher a cow. Well, old Detlefson would come over, and he's the butcher, you know, and he'd have a .22 rifle, and single shot at that, it wasn't anything fancy. He'd just come in there and go bang, that cow would fall right on the floor, and he'd cut his throat, and went on from there. I bet you he must have killed hundreds and hundreds of cows that way. So, the idea that you have to have, you know, a .30 caliber, here at hunting season, it sounds like a war zone. About November, when deer season opens, I stay in the house. I don't go outside. It scares the hell out of me. And they kill 4 or 5 hunters every year here in Missouri. And that's when they're out hunting for deer. God help us if they ever went out hunting for people. I'm sure they'd kill a bunch. But they're all out here with these .30 calibers. And have you ever seen what happens to the meat in an animal when you fire a gun through it? Comes out what they call bloodshot. I mean, hell, that stuff ain't fit for a dog when you get through. And you know, a deer's only got about 30 pounds of meat on him to start with. Oh, I know somebody's going to say, well, my God, I killed one. Well, he weighed 100 pounds. Well, yeah, but the hide weighs 25 or 30, and the guts are half the weight of the animal, you know. You ain't eating the hide and the guts and the head and the horns and the hooves now, are you? I mean, when you get right down to where that animal's butchered out, they butcher out about 50%. You know, if you're lucky, you get 50% meat. And that includes all the bones that go with it, too, you know. I mean, you get right down to where the rubber meets the road out there, boys. And you know, those deer, they got about 30, 40 pounds of meat on them. And you fire .130 caliber through those hindquarters over there, and it cuts it down quite a bit, doesn't it? Yeah, I think you'd be better off shooting them with a .22. That's the way we do it out here. Of course, we're not professionals. We're not big game hunters. You know, some guy said to me one time, you go deer hunting? I said, no, I just wait until they come up in the yard. Don't see any point in going out there hunting them. They come right up here in the yard. It's a place to shoot them, in my view. Then you can go out there and bleed them, and then you can make them fit to eat. But, you know, You don't need an AK-47. I think that's a phallic symbol. I think that's a redneck phallic symbol, and that it's like a pickup. You know, you just got to have a pickup with two guns sitting in the back window to show everybody that you're male. I guess that's to show people that I got something between my legs dangling down there. Most of us guys around here, around my neck of the woods, you know, we don't do that. I always remember going into the Blue Room, and I've been in the cattle business all my life, and I never had a big belt buckle, and I never wore cowboy boots, and I don't wear a 10-gallon hat. I got a baseball hat, and I got an ordinary belt, and I wear rubber boots, because if you're a real cowman, I mean, if you're a real cattleman, you're out there where the cows poop on the ground a lot, and so we have to wear boots. Boy, I see some, you know, these Tony Lama fancy boots that these guys wear. Why, I've never seen one of you city guys that would come out here and walk out to my barn and sit down and milk a cow. Why, you'd be afraid of getting cow poop on your Tony Lamas, wouldn't you? And I call them drugstore cowboys. Well, anyway, the moral of the story is all the cattlemen that I ever run across, you know, we avoid trying to show anybody that we're associated with cows at all, so we kind of dress up like normal people. We don't wear phallic symbols around our necks and on our heads and down on our feet, but people have this gun thing in their minds, and they write me emails and letters, and they complain loudly every time Congress passes some new legislation on guns. Now, I'm an old man now, and I haven't had any problem with guns or the IRS or the BATF or anybody else. Of course, I'm not on this list, but I guess I could be. You know, one of these days they're liable to get it. Radio talk show hosts are liable to be on the list. Prohibited. Can't have a gun. Makes about as much sense as deadbeat dads or drunk driver. I mean, hell, you might as well put somebody on the list, and then every time you catch one of us, you can lock us up for 10 years and then tax people $350,000 to store us in one of these human warehouses. America now has more people locked up in prison than we have farmers by 100,000. We have more people locked up in prison than any other nation in the world. America is now the world's number one police state. Didn't used to be that way. We Americans weren't fearful, timid little fellers running around scared, crying to Congress to pass laws to protect us from bad people, but that's what we've degenerated into. I'm not quite sure why, but that's where we're at today. Hell, our women can't even have babies. They got to go to the hospital and have a cesarean. They ain't even strong enough to have a baby anymore. Well, at least a third of them ain't. Now, these antique firearms are an exception to the law. Federal law exempts antique firearms from gun control. Muzzle loaders, so-called black powder guns, loaded from the same end where the bullet exits, are legal, whether original or replica. Original or replica. See, you could have one of these muzzle loaders made up over here in Branson. They do that all the time. It could be made last month. It's a replica antique firearm. That doesn't come under these firearms regulations. That's why it's a loophole in the law. Regardless of the date of manufacture, you can buy the mail order. The most practical antique guns for self-defense are the so-called cap-and-ball revolvers, originally made between 1840 and 1870, and they were used by Wyatt Earp and other gunslingers of the West. Numerous companies make and sell replicas of these six-shooters. Many can be had for $100 or less. A good choice would be the 44 caliber model 1860 Army Colt revolver, cap and ball. To use them, you need powder, lead balls, wads, and percussion caps, all readily available in gun shops and sporting goods stores. Now, of course, that's probably not the kind of phallic symbol that most of you guys out there are looking for. I mean, you want an AK-47 or an Uzi. I was a kid one time, believe it or not, and I told my dad, I said, "Dad, how come we don't have any pistols? How come we don't have any guns to carry on our holster on our hip?" And he said, "Well, what were you going to do with it, son?" And I said, "Well, I guess we could kill deer with it, or we could kill rattlesnakes with it, and we could kill varmints with it." And he said, "Well, when was the last time that you needed to kill a rattlesnake with a sidearm?" I'm about 12 years old, and I said, "Well, I guess I haven't had that come up yet." And he said, "Well, son, I'm 43 years old, and I haven't had to kill one with a sidearm either." And he said, "I've killed a few rattlesnakes, and I always shot them with a long gun. Did you think that a .22 pistol or a .38 or a .45 pistol would kill that rattlesnake any better than a .22 or a .30-06 or a .30-30 long barrel?" And I said, no, I guess not. I said, "Well, guess you don't need a pistol for killing rattlesnakes. What else would you want a pistol for, son?" And I kind of thunk and thunk for a long time there. You know, what in the hell would we use a pistol for? And I thought about it, and I said, I don't know. And he said, "Well, that's about right." And he said, "You know, I'm 43 years old, and I've never had a pistol. I don't have one now. And if I live to be 110, I'll probably never have one. Because the only purpose for a pistol, the only purpose for a handgun, is to kill people with." And he looked at me, he said, "Are there any people out there that you want to kill?" And I said, no, I can't think of any, Dad. I can't think of anybody that I want to kill right now." And he said, "Well, I guess you're about where I'm at. I haven't had any need to kill any people. And so there's just really been no real need for a handgun." And he went on to say, "If there ever is any need for me to kill somebody," he said, "I reckon I got a .30-30 carbine, and I got a .30-06, and I've got a .22 Remington in there, and I think that those guns will kill people just as well as a handgun, don't you?" And I thunk about that one for a minute, and I said, "Yeah, Dad, I reckon if you shot somebody with a .30-30, you'd kill them just as dead as with a .45. Hell, for that matter, if you can shoot a cow between the eyes and kill her, I guess you could shoot a man between the eyes and kill him just as easy." Now, you know, I'm an old man, and I don't have any handgun. I won't say I've never had one. I've had a few come in here, you know, and trade or something. I got rid of them as soon as I could. Just took them for money because somebody came to school and didn't have any money. If you gave me my druthers and said, "Would you rather have this handgun or would you rather have gold coin?" I'd take the gold coin every time. I had no use for a pistol. Now, I can see policemen carrying pistols. They kind of need them because they kill people with them every once in a while. And it's kind of unhandy to carry a long gun around with you. You know, so they carry sidearms. And police detectives, plainclothes guys, they carry them under their armpits because they don't want anybody to know that they're armed. That's why I think that airline pilots ought to be packing heat under their armpits. And I think that there is a need for an airline pilot to kill a terrorist on an airplane. And I think they all ought to be armed and prepared and ready to kill one anytime that one comes along. And they do in Israel. They don't have any hijackings. Of course, they probably haven't got any World Trade Centers to knock down either, but then on the other hand, they don't need any if they got their airline pilots all armed, do they? So I'm just kind of pointing out a couple of points here. The people write me letters and they complain about the government interfering with their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. I would submit to you that between 1840 and 1870, Americans were killing other Americans with these cap and ball pistols. And during the Civil War, they were just killing people right and left, killed 600,000, and they were all antique firearms. Now, by God, if your great-great-great-granddaddy could go out and kill 600,000 people with an antique firearm, seems like to me that they'll kill people just as well today as they did in the 1860s, don't you? I don't think you need a brand new Uzi to go out and kill people. I think that an 1860 model cap and ball will do the job if you put your mind to it. All right, we got to take a little break here and remind all of you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And keep in mind that the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, all you got to do is order it. Call 417-273-4967 and say, send me one of them CD packets. That's area code 417-273-4967. They go out of here by snail mail because we can't send them out over the Internet. So if you would give us your snail mail address, we'll be happy to send you one. And then the opinions and beliefs, the comments, the views and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this radio station. But it should. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. Call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, now there's cartridges that go into these guns, and before we get into the cartridges, I'm going to give you a couple of cases that you might want to look up. Remember, we told you right off the bat, don't believe me, because you better research this out for yourself, but I'm going to tell you a little story here. I'm going to read you a little short blurb. It comes out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, San Francisco, California, out in the land of fruits and nuts. A federal appeals court Thursday overturned a Mesa, Arizona man's federal conviction of possessing 5 machine guns. A 3-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals of San Francisco reversed the conviction, ruling that the congressional ban does not apply to homemade machine guns and their parts because they were never in the stream of commerce. I'm going to underline that. Because they were never in the stream of commerce. You see, government only regulates trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. Trade, commerce, business, or industry affecting a public interest comes from Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. Now, here's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Pretty new decision, too. I got this 11-14-03, so this was, about a year and a half. Ninth Circuit Court says, if you've made this machine gun at home, did you hear that? I mean, you could have a fully automatic Georgie Gordon machine gun made in your own lathe in your own basement. You can't have a fully automatic Uzi or Thompson or somebody else's machine gun that comes out of some corporation someplace unless you have your federal tax stamp. Which for all of you all of you men out there, I've never talked to a woman yet that wanted a fully automatic machine gun, but I've had quite a few men here really bummed out because they can't have a fully automatic Uzi submachine gun. My God, boys. All you got to do is go down to the IRS. Go down to your local IRS office and tell them, I want one of those tax stamps. They'll sell you one, $225. And you, too, can be one of the few Americans that have a fully automatic machine gun. And what is an automatic machine gun? What is a fully automatic machine gun? What do you use those for? Isn't it for killing people? See, I subscribe to a strange view. Thou shalt do no murder. It's against the law to kill people. Somebody said to me, well, we might have to revolt against the government. Why? What's the problem? Why would you want to revolt against the government? What kind of an advantage does that have in life? Well, because, you know, our government might get dictatorial or tyrannical. My God, isn't the government of the United States about as dictatorial and tyrannical as it can get? I mean, hell, you can't even drive your car. I mean, you're regulated with over 2,000 rules and regulations just driving your car. That isn't tyrannical. I mean, you got a tax system that's confiscatory. It's taking 74% of everything that you create and produce if you're median or above. If you're in the median wage bracket, that is, if you're making $41,000 a year or more, they're taking 74%. You people aren't even smart enough to figure out how much the bastards are stealing from you. Let me give you a clue. At 16% for Social Security, 17% minimum for income tax, 16% for hidden taxes. You got 14 total taxes, which includes but is not limited to sales tax, real estate taxes, gasoline taxes, use taxes, luxury taxes. It's 14 of them. Add up those 14 taxes, make $100,000 a year, and it takes $74,000 a year to pay the taxes. It leaves you with 26. Isn't that just special? Huh? You tell people that and they look at you and they don't believe you because they can't add and subtract. They've been to public school. Now, the court ruled that there was neither a transfer nor a sale of the weapons or their parts, so Congress did not have the power under the Commerce Clause to regulate homemade machine guns crafted from scratch. Robert Stewart was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment for being a felon in possession of firearms and of possessing illegal machine guns last year. All right. Now, if you want to go out and make your own guns in your own basement, now my daddy did that once. My daddy made a special gun. He had a 2520 Winchester, and that's kind of a it kind of looked like an M16 round today. And he had it necked down to a 222, so that he could fire 222 ammunition out of a 2520 carbine with a short barrel and then a big telescope for shooting prairie dogs at long range with a short barrel. That was so that he could stick that gun through the window of his 55 Chevrolet automobile. Somebody said, "Why, you can't shoot out of the window of your car." Well, my daddy carried that across his lap. Now he's driving down these backcountry roads over here, and there's a squirrel out there, you know, 100, 200, 300 yards away. My dad stopped and shut off the engine. Pull that gun off of his lap and hold it right up next to that wind wing strip, you know. And he'd fire off around, and that 222, you know, those prairie dogs, you know, they kind of stand up in the air on their hind legs, and they got their two front legs kind of hanging down. Well, he'd gut shoot them right in the middle. That 222 would blow them in two, and they'd go out of the scope like a couple of windmills fly in an opposite direction. Hell of a gun. Now, there wasn't anything else like it. There's probably nothing else like it in the world today. It was specially handcrafted, just like this gun here. Just like this gun here. See? Now, the problem with this gun that my daddy's got is that it was made in commerce. See, it was a Winchester. You see that? And so that thing was made out in Hartford, Connecticut, and shipped across all these states. And even though a gunsmith took another barrel and put on it and crafted it, that thing is commercial. That thing has been in commerce. That thing is regulated and controlled. Especially since 1898. That's not an antique firearm. And while that gun is handmade, the only one of its kind, it's commercial. Remember that, commercial. It's very important for what we're coming up to. Because the Ninth Circuit comes along and tells you part of the riddle here, boys and girls. Here's part of the riddle. If this thing has been in commerce, it can be regulated and controlled. Your Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms applies to keeping and bearing arms that are not involved in commerce. Now, back in the olden days, in 1787 and 1860, when people were making guns, they would go to a gunsmith, and a gunsmith would make him a gun. And then slowly but surely, corporations came in, and they said, well, you know, look at all the money there is to be made, and so Colt and Winchester and Remington and all of these gun companies incorporated. They incorporated, and here's what happened. It's called Hale versus Hinkle, 201 U.S. 43. Cite that at 201 U.S. 43, 1905. And this case came before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1905. It was the American Tobacco Company. The controller of the company received a subpoena from the IRS and said, deliver your books and papers. And he said, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. The case wound its way all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And here's what the Supreme Court said about corporations and individuals as it relates to constitutional rights. The court said, conceding that the witness was an officer of the corporation under investigation and that he was entitled to assert the rights of the corporation with respect to the production of its books and papers, we are of the opinion that there is a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter, the corporation, has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination at the suit of the state. All right, did you get that? Corporations have no rights. Now, they may have some privileges and immunities granted by their creator, but they don't have rights. Now, there are some people out here in our society that used to have rights called individuals. Most people in America are no longer individuals. They're wards of the state. And then these wards of the state, they're about the same status as a mental patient in a mental hospital. It's about like the average American today has the status of a mental patient in the Napa State Mental Hospital. And then they're bitching and complaining about their right to keep and bear arms. My God, boys and girls, we can't have crazy people running around the mental hospital armed with guns. Does that make sense to you? Well, it made sense to Congress because Congress told us that they didn't want mental defectives running around with guns. And they put them on the list. Now, here in Hale versus Hinkle, the Supreme Court's telling you the answer to the riddle, and they said the individual. Now, listen to these individuals. The individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen, and he's entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited. He, the individual, owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation so far as it may tend to incriminate him. He, the individual, owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom. You ought to underline that. He receives nothing therefrom. You know, 51% of Americans today receive a government check. Nearly all Americans have some kind of a government franchise, from driver's licenses to social security numbers to welfare and food stamps and WIC and aid to families with dependent children. Americans today are welfarers. Well, of course you need to when you're paying 74% of everything you create and produce to the government. You couldn't make it on the 26% that's left. You got to have some government benefits, don't you? And you do. Now, an individual owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom. Most Americans owe duty, responsibility, taxes, and obedience to their master because they receive something from their master, the state. Americans used to take pride in the fact that they were not on the dole, that they received nothing from the government. Today, if you said, "I receive nothing from the government," people would look at you and say, "You fool, you blind, you nitwit. Why aren't you getting your share like all the rest of us?" Now, the individual receives nothing therefrom beyond the protection of his life and property. His rights, that's the rights of an individual, are such as existed by the law of the land, that's the common law, long antecedent to the organization of the state, and can only be taken from him by due process of law. Due process. And in accordance with the Constitution. You want a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms? And you want to be a mental patient in the hospital? So that you can get all the freebies and all the benefits and then claim you've got rights? Had a judge explain that to me one time. I was in his chambers and I was bitching and complaining about my rights and one thing and another. And he said, "Do you have a social security number?" And I said, "Well, of course I do." And he said, "Well, don't you know that it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes?" I looked at him like I'd been blindsided, you know. Why, he couldn't have hurt me more if he would have sucker punched me in my kidneys. I said, "Huh?" He said, "Oh, yeah, yeah. See, government regulates that which it subsidizes, and all of you Americans now want subsidies. You want to be in on the dole. You want to get your share." Oh, the government comes along and they regulate and control all of those commercial activities for which you're receiving benefits. So, these can only be taken away from the individual by due process of law and in accordance with the Constitution. If you were an individual, you'd have due process, you'd have constitutional rights. And among your rights as an individual would be the right to refuse to incriminate yourself, and the right to immunize or immunity of yourself and your property from arrest or seizure except under a warrant of the law. Yeah, that cop, when he comes out and gives you a ticket, confiscates your car and hauls you off to jail, he doesn't have any warrant. What would you need a warrant for? You're a mental patient in the hospital. Does the guard at the mental hospital need a warrant to grab you and haul you off and lock you up? I mean, come on, boys and girls. It's time to grow up and get real, isn't it? The individual owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. So those of us that live as individuals and don't trespass upon the rights of anybody else, we don't have any problems with OSHA or the EPA or the State Tax Commission or anybody else for that matter. I don't have any complaints. I used to complain a lot, but I don't anymore. Now listen, here's the corporation. The court goes on to say, on the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state. The corporation is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. The corporation receives certain special privileges and franchises. The corporation holds those privileges and franchises subject to the laws of the state and the limitations of its charter. Corporations. Can people act in corporate capacity and be regulated and controlled like corporations? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that's what those 25,000 gun control laws are all about. They're to regulate incompetent persons who are unable to take care of themselves and unable to handle guns safely. Now, I remember when I was a kid, now this is back about 1950, you know, about 1950, one, two, three, long in there. Eureka, California. Well, I used to have a 22 bolt action. Remember that old 1922 bolt action? I was a paper boy, and I'd carry that gun about this time of year, too, about April in Eureka, and you have all these pigeons. I was shooting pigeons off of the power lines in Eureka, California in 1952 with a 22, delivering papers for the Humboldt Times. Well, I never had a problem. Can you imagine a 12 or 13, 14-year-old kid now today in 2005 carrying a 22 down the street on his paper route shooting pigeons off the power lines? God, I'd never even been to a hunter safety course either. See, boys and girls, when I was a kid, it was kind of expected that every man would train his son in the use of firearms. That every man would train his son in the use of a car, an automobile. It was in the days when we used to have individual responsibility that families were expected to do that. Today, families don't train their children in how to drink alcoholic beverages. My dad trained me. He taught me. He sat me down at the table and said, this is the way we mix a margarita. This is the way we mix gin and tonic. This is the way we drink beer. This is how much you can drink. This is how much you cannot drink. Here's how much it takes to get drunk. Here's how much it takes to impair your judgment. I wasn't a binge drinker. I didn't run off to college and get out on, what do they call this, March Madness and spring break and go out and try to drink a bottle of whiskey and kill myself. My dad taught me how to drink. My dad taught me how to use a gun. My dad taught me how to use a car. I know, it's a wild concept. Families with individual responsibility, teaching and training the younger generation. My dad taught me a trade. My dad taught me how to work. My dad, my families, my uncles and aunts and so on, taught me what it was to be a citizen. Here's what you have to do to make it out there in the real world. Today we send our kids off to preschool, day school, and public school. And when we get these kids back when they're 18 years old, they're driving around on the street, shooting people off the street corners in random drive-by shootings. I submit to you that those people, those youngsters, have never been taught and trained by their daddies in how to keep and bear arms. And so the only solution then is to have the state do it, isn't it? I mean, if you people out there called the citizens cannot handle guns without driving down the streets and shooting people off the street corners, well, then the only other solution, I guess, is to have the government do it. And to do that, they've got to have 25,000 rules and regulations and customs, usages, and practices, don't they? Now, you wonder why you got a police state. It's because you're so damn incompetent out there, Mr. and Mrs. America, and you can't handle life yourselves, and you're on the dole, and you're on welfare and government assistance, and so your guardian, the government, is telling you how to live your life, because obviously you're incompetent and incapable of living your life separate from a guardian, for crying out loud, which is what a corporation is. Now, corporation powers are limited by law. Corporations can make no contract not authorized by its charter. Corporation rights to act as a corporation are only preserved to it so long as it obeys the laws of its creator. There is reserved a right in the legislature to investigate its contracts and to find out whether it has exceeded its powers. And it would be a strange anomaly to hold that a state having chartered a corporation to make use of certain franchises could not, in the exercise of its sovereignty, inquire as to how those franchises had been employed and whether they had been abused, and then demand the production of the corporate books and papers for that purpose. And that's all the highway patrolman's doing. You applied for a driver's license, you got a state franchise, you're in a corporate capacity, and so the government is inquiring as to whether or not you've exceeded your powers. Same thing with guns that you went down to Walmart and bought, because it's a corporate gun bought from Winchester or Uzi or somebody else. That's all that really boils down to. Now let's go back here and try this one again. Listen to this. Antique firearms exceptions. The federal law exempts antique firearms from all gun controls. 18 U.S.C. Code Section 921A16 defines antique firearms as all guns made prior to 1899, muzzle loaders made any time, and replicas of pre-1899 cartridge firing guns made any time, provided such replicas use cartridges not readily available in the ordinary channels of commercial trade. I got an old gun up here. It's a 3240 Buffalo gun, made in 1872. That's an antique firearm. Will it kill you? Oh, I think it will. If it would kill a 6,000-pound buffalo, I think it would kill a man. Honest to God, I do. You ever heard of a 3240? Not very ordinary. All right, now that's an antique firearm. Not regulated or controlled. However, under 26 U.S.C. 5861 of the IRS code, all cartridge-firing machine guns and short-barreled shotguns are illegal and regardless of where or when they were made. So if you're going to have these machine guns, unless, of course, you want to make your own Charlie Little's machine gun in your own machine shop in your basement. Now, you could do that. I showed you that story. That comes from the Ninth Circuit. Muzzle loaders, so-called black powder guns, loaded from the end where the bullet exits, are legal, whether original or replica, regardless of the date of manufacture. And then you can buy them by mail order. Now listen, during the Revolutionary War, and up until about 1930 or 40, when they came out with these cap and balls, our great-great-great-granddaddies were out here killing each other, killing the English and killing everybody else with these muzzle loaders. I got a 50 caliber muzzle loader up here. I mean, it shoots a whale of a big ball. I think if that big ball hits you in the chest, I think it'll kill you deader than a popcorn fart. And they're totally legal, even for those 9 categories of people that are prohibited. That's because they're antiques, little exception in the law. And then, of course, the most practical antique guns for self-defense. I mean, you know, you want to carry a gun in your bedroom in case somebody comes through the door. These are the so-called cap-and-ball revolvers, originally made between 1840 and 1870, and they were used by Wyatt Earp and all these old-timey gunslingers of the Old West. Numerous companies make and sell these replicas. You don't have to buy the original antique. I mean, you can get replicas of them, made last month. And they're outside the purview of gun regulation. Isn't that special? Many can be had for $100 or less. God, talk about a Saturday night special now. Saturday night special, a 44 cap and ball. A good choice would be the 44 caliber Army 1860. To use them, you need powder, lead balls, wads, and percussion caps, all readily available in gun shops and sporting goods stores. How do you can get it from Bass Pro? Just go down to your local Bass Pro shop. Pick one up. Well, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll be back here tomorrow night to tell you a little more on a story here of antique firearms. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.